All right, chapter 12. Number 8. Hey, James. This proverb here, 12:8. A man will be praised according to his insight, but one of perverse mind will be despised. I think that's generally talking about one who expresses their wisdom, that's his insight, and you'll catch some honor for that. And converse of that, the second part, one with that mind who is not of an honorable way, and one who is not right with God, will be despised. Shame, dishonor. Now, in this case, where does this honor come from for his insight? And this perverse mind will be despised. Who does this? Who recognizes the insight? Who does the despising?
God.
Others around him, too. You know, will praise him or despise him, depending on, the wise or the unwise.
Yeah. And that's correct, Susan, what you're saying, but also it looks out a little bit too now where people can look at you. So we've still got that influence going on, don't we, from other people and how we're looked at, all right? And no doubt that God always sees, but this insight, how we express our wisdom and that praise, all right? 9, better is he who is lightly esteemed and has a servant than who honors himself and lacks bread. So we've got someone that's lightly esteemed. They're an humble person, and they've got a servant. What does that kind of mean?
King James is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
He that is despised and has a servant is better than he that honors himself and lacks
bread. Boy, that just changes everything here, doesn't it?
It's a lot different.
Well, it's unauthorized in this class, okay?
This is the authorized version, Doug.
You know what we're talking about there, James? The authorized version is the King James.
That's
yeah, you see, it's always the authorized version. All right. Where am I at? Oh. This idea of servant is one who has some wealth or something, okay? So here is a person who is lightly esteemed, an humble reputation, and has a material wealth or a servant for that. But the second... And then the second is better than what? One who is honors himself. That's
thinks
the key part.
Too highly of himself.
That's right.
That's the thing.
Okay, or braggart and lacks bread. Can you be a braggart and starve?
Sure.
I guess you could. Some people put on a facade, don't they? All right? Of better than they are. They brag better than they are. And it's just simply saying here, it's better to be, lightly esteemed, an humble person, I won't use that word Sal used, okay, and have some wealth and things, or material things, than to be a braggart. And the key word here, I think, is braggart, okay? And what is a braggart prone to do?
Brag.
Boast.
Overly.
Exaggerate.
Yes. Blow a lot of hot air.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, and maybe prone to lie or whatever it is, but it's interesting, all right? So the emphasis there is the idea of braggart, so you need to think about that. People recognize you, though, if you're an esteemed or humble person, all right? Number 10, a righteous man has regard for the life of his animal, but even the compassion of the wicked is cruel. What is this? Who wants to? Which person should own an animal? I guess in that case, a righteous person or see the compassion of a wicked person. All right. Right under guard for the life of his animal. A righteous man respects everything created by God, even these lowly creatures. He cares for them. He has regard for them, which is the word I have there. But even the compassion of a wicked person is still cruel. Even to the highest degree of this wicked person is still cruel towards an animal. Okay? And that, I guess you'd say that's the best the wicked guy has to have, offer, and it's still hurtful to the animal. because this is one of those animal rights passages, all right? So even a righteous person will treat humans, okay, in fairness and honesty, and even animals he'll treat well. But even the best that a wicked person has, okay, is cruel to the animal. So just a thought there, and that kind of slips in there. And 11.
Don't worry about any toys. They drop. That's it.
All right. Yeah. 11.
But thank you.
Okay. Anything to say about animals? Anything else about that?
I know Balaam, when he was riding his donkey, the donkey was trying to keep him from going into the angel to be destroyed, and he started beating his donkey. And the donkey, of course, the Lord allowed the donkey to speak. The donkey said, "Why are you beating me? You know, I've been your good beast of burden. Have I not, you know, carried your load and taken you where you needed to go and everything?" And then, of course, he saw that the angel was in the way. But, I mean, you know, he was on a mission of evil. He was on a wicked mission himself.
That's right. And spare no expense.
All right. And so, I mean, you know, it's an example in the Bible of a man who has got wickedness in his heart and is beating his beast of burden. You know, who is actually trying to save his life.
Does this prohibit, if you have a horse, to put the bit in the horse's mouth? That does some pain and discomfort. No, it doesn't, does it?
You're not mistreating him.
Right. There's some pain involved, and some, you know, I understand that, okay, because you have to.
Well, there's pain and discipline.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Okay, good. That's the point I wanted to make.
That's not
the word cruel.
Right. That's right.
Okay. All right. He who tills his land will have plenty of bread, but he who pursues worthless things lacks sense. If you're tilling your bread, your land, what are you doing?
Working.
You're working, you're taking care of what you have, aren't you? And what's the general idea that if you're tilling your land and working hard at what you're doing, you'll have plenty, won't you?
You reap what you sow.
Yeah, yeah. And the second part is, but he who pursues worthless things lacks sense. Some version, I think I've read there. Okay? But the idea of one tills their land and one pursues worthless things or worthless directions. So, there's maybe the system priorities you have. Are the outcomes different? Yeah, because you're not paying attention, are you, to the things you do have. All right? You could say, he who does not till his land or doesn't not diligent with his land will lack sense, because you can't have things of plenty in this proverb, okay, without having a priority to do what's right and use what God's given you. Okay. So you take care of your thing. Let's see. Number 12. The wicked man desires the booty of evil men, but the root of the righteous yields fruit. Here's a wicked man wants something from a wicked man. So he wants even what evil men has, don't he? Their goods. Their things. I guess he wants things that he desires, things that others have taken, what he hasn't worked for. But what about this righteous man? But the root of the righteous yields fruit. What would be the root of a righteous? What are we looking at here? What part of the person? What character of the person? Sure. Okay. So from deep down, the righteous, those deep ethical things concerning the righteous man, he's going to yield fruit. Okay? That's where his desire is.
That's where all desires come from. Mm-hmm. You know, the wicked's heart is what desires. You know, and so, you know, the psalmist here is just saying the same thing, you know, in different words, conveying the same thought,
mm-hmm.
you
mm-hmm.
know.
He's got kind of a...
versus the righteous in the heart and what they desire.
Is this, if you're desired, up in the top, we're dealing with one man and another man, kind of like two people, all right? And in the bottom, the root of the righteous yields fruit. Could we say yields fruit for themselves or for others?
We could if we want to run the parallel out. Okay.
So, from our innermost being, our deep ethics, we can yield fruit for others and help others and nourish others. 13. An evil man is ensnared, that's the key word, by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous will escape from trouble. Now we got this evil man, a dishonest man, and he's ensnared, trapped by transgression of his lips. What's an example of transgression of your lips?
Lies. It's called a lie.
Lies, that's right. Okay? So he's trapped by his lies, isn't he? Okay? But the righteous will escape from trouble. How does a righteous escape from trouble? Did he lie?
No.
No? So what's he escaping from?
Being caught in a lie.
Maybe other people's lies. He has a way out. He discusses it. People say things about it. It could be that too. Okay? If you escape from trouble, let's say I have done something. Is there an avenue of escape, an avenue of forgiveness? Can I not repent? Sure. Okay. We have an escape, don't we? All right. So the righteous have this avenue where you can write, okay, either what other people said about you, or you can write things that you've done. Because the righteous always has that, all right, where the evil doesn't. And in writing that, you're doing something honest versus the evil man who's dishonest. Fourteen, a man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his words, and the deeds of a man's hands will return to him. Let's look at the second part first. And the deeds of a man's hands will return to him. Now, man's hands, it signifies what?
Your actions, what you do.
That's right. We've been talking about talk up to this point, haven't we? Talk, yeah. Things like that. But this kind of gets kind of direct down to that labor kind of thing. Okay? And it'll return to him. What's the idea there? If you choose to do good with your hands, good labor, it's good for you from that point on, generally, isn't it? Okay? Because you're diligent, you work, you're fair with people, that kind of thing. All right, you do good work. Can you do shoddy work as a contractor? Sure. Okay? I just threw that in.
Might not have very much business.
Yeah. So the second part deals with labor. Now this first part, a man who is satisfied with the good by the fruit of his words. Now we're talking about speech. And a man will be, says, satisfied with good or rewarded with good by the fruit of his words. So there's some good, some reward involved with the good fruit from your words in there. So.
He's honest. To me, it's like he's honest in what he says and he's honest in his work. He's not a sluggard. And he's not a slacker, and he's not a liar or a deceitful person, you know, that kind of thing, even from his mouth or his work.
Even beyond that, number 14 is positive all the way, is it? Mm-hmm. Okay, both are positive things. Do with what you speak, labors, let them yield fruit. Let them be good, okay? And that's good for you, isn't it? Okay? So those sort of things. So in other words, everything you do all the glory of God. So, all right? 15. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. Well, that's a difficult one, isn't it? Have we always talked about is right in his own eyes? Is that the way of a fool? And that's what? Selfishness, isn't it? Okay, he looks to self. Right in his own eyes. Therefore, if he's right in his own eyes, what? How does counsel affect him?
He won't listen.
All right. Listens to counsel. Okay? We've already seen that one who listens to counsel, a wise person is one who listens to counsel because they want to gain more wisdom. Alright? Okay. Now 16, a fool's anger is known at once, but a prudent man conceals dishonor. A fool's anger is known at once.
Hot-headed,
right. Quick mouth. Easily provoked. Loud. Alright? Talking without thinking, maybe? Not prudent in their speech, not thinking what they're going to say. has known it once, isn't it? But a prudent man, one who's cautious and thinks, conceals dishonor. Not that he's dishonored anything, but he maybe have a tendency to overlook an insult. Maybe stays cool when he's insulted. Maybe a person who conceals dishonor is one who kind of bites his tongue, okay? Instead of saying things. And that's the contrast here, isn't it? All right? We're prudent and known it once. So we need to think about when we say things, how far do we want to go with it? What word do we want to choose? All right.
It's how we react to somebody who is acting badly, a fool or someone who is not wise will react badly.
Mm-hmm.
A prudent, wise man knows that they're acting badly, and it might be prudent just to, because sometimes it doesn't do any good to talk to a hothead, in the midst of being hotheaded.
See, an interesting word, fool's anger. Anger is a little stronger word, isn't it? Okay? It may promote wrath. So you have to watch out with that. All right?
There's a saying, you can remain silent and let everybody think you're a fool, but open your mouth and prove them right.
That's one of the Proverbs.
That's one of the Proverbs.
Yeah, it's somewhat like that, yeah.
There's a saying. Well, it's not, the one I'm thinking is not from the Proverbs, but it's something, I don't have it exactly right.
Yeah.
Sometimes best to say nothing. Isn't it? Okay. Just let people say what they're going to say. Because maybe that's all they want to do, is just say what they want to say. Right? And not provoke you. Because we want to act honorably, don't we? We don't want to be dishonored. 17. He who speaks truth tells what is right, but a false witnesses deceit. Speaks truth. And when you speak it what? Speak it as it ought to be. Don't conceal part of it. Be honest and complete when you talk. Complete. You've been around and somebody tell half of it? See? Yeah, okay. Maybe sometimes in a husband-wife relationship, you're talking to someone else about a husband and wife, their actions. Can you just tell half of it? Makes you look good, okay? Or kids do this, whatever it is, all right? See, that one get in trouble. So the admonition here is to speak truth and tell what is right and honest and complete. But a false witness deceit. What's interesting with witness here is this may be a court case or whatever it is. And what's the idea of deceit mean?
Lying with intent to deceive.
That's right. Okay. Root word is deceive. And you're going to have omissions. I'll go back to the word lie. All right. Whoops.
Sorry.
All right. So just be careful when we're telling things, always speak the truth. All right. 18, there's one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Can people have cutting remarks?
Sure.
Hard remarks? Okay. And speaks rashly kind of goes back to the other deal, isn't it? The idea of speaking quickly maybe without thinking, hurtful. But what about the wise person? What do they bring?
Healing
to one who had been thrust? Okay, yes. The idea of healing is the idea of soothing or repair or help. Okay, maybe after the fact to help someone, okay, who has been thrust with swords. Okay, you can overhear things sometimes. Okay. Even if you said things. See, it doesn't say a fool here. One who speaks rash like the thrust of a sword, the tongue of wise brings healing.
Sometimes people say things and it comes across rather harshful. And they don't really mean it like that. It's just sometimes their personality is just like that.
For some reason when I was reading this verse, I thought of when I was young and I got spanked. It's kind of like getting thrusted with a sword.
They did a good job.
Yeah, and you get corrected and you find out why you got that spanking, and then you understood it.
It brings,
those are the wise words.
And it brings some healing and repair to your actions, doesn't it?
Right. Don't do it again.
Yeah, that's right. All right.
Okay.
But James is right. The sword thrust, it cuts. It's
two-edged sword.
It hurts.
And we're saying words here, aren't we? We're not back to these physical things of, you know, of whatever it is, your hands or whatever it is. This is words can do that.
Okay. It's also what you say.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
how and what?
Yeah, I mean, because the speaks rashly, you stupid? But then the time of the wise, it's like, okay. And then you're nice and calm and you're explaining.
Yes.
So you've got your two different ways of handling your words.
That's right. It speaks rashly. Okay, that's a good thing to remember.
Even with children. And this, sometimes we don't have all the facts, or we don't take into consideration the situation, you know, and so we can jump in as parents or as grandparents or even as onlookers and create and have an opinion or, you know, formulate an idea about something. We may not even speak, but we formulate and draw a conclusion that's not actually, might not be correct because we haven't gotten all the facts or we haven't taken into consideration. But if we, as parents, especially with our young children, if we find out what's going on and do some listening and then do the disciplining or the correcting or the whatever. It's more healing than just jumping in there and, you know, trying to attack the situation.
It's interesting you said parents and grandparents. So it's really all ages, isn't it? We have to watch our tongue at all ages. And we can speak. I don't know, sometimes older people can, you know, most of the time they're calm, but sometimes they're real cutting too. You have to be aware of that. Maybe that's one of those times we just don't answer back either. Okay? So be careful with that. Good. 19. Truthful lips will be, back to speaking again, truthful lips will be established forever, but a lying tongue is only for a moment. I guess forever and moment are two contrasting things. And truthful lips and lying lips are lying tongue. So what's the idea of will be established forever? In things you say, if it's truthful, does it need to be changed later? Is it lasting? Does it have some endurance to it? It does, doesn't it? Okay? Let's just take a proverb that's truth. If you say the proverb is truth, that's got lasting value, doesn't it? Okay? There's lasting value to things that are truth. But a lying tongue is only for a moment. What's that? How good is a lying tongue?
Well, people will find you out.
Yeah.
Nobody will listen to you.
It's good for the next lie, isn't it? One lie is only good for the next one. All right.
Hey, Doug, also, if you're talking about the truthful lips endures forever, that if you're truthful about something, then you today, you're going to be that way tomorrow, and I'll trust you from now on if you continue to tell me.
So it's a trust issue now, isn't it?
Right.
A trust. That's right. And isn't that what we all want to do? Establish that in a character, a good character that does that.
Well, one lie would risk really, that would be it.
Well, if he who lies is going to be punished.
Yeah. Of course, the lying tongue is only for a moment. You notice sometimes on TV shows where they're interviewing a witness, and you know, in the witness room, not in court, but in the other room, and what do the investigators always do when they're asking questions?
Try to trap them.
Trap them. But they trap by asking the same question over and over, or the same question, a little different direction on it, okay? Over and over and over, okay? Or different people alternate asking the questions. So the lying tongue is only for a moment. Maybe they'll change it. That's what they're hoping, to gain more out of it. So, and this may be a little bit with that thing we just saw in the last one about witnesses, and that sort of thing. Now, 20. Deceit, we've seen that word before, lies. Is in the heart of those who devise evil, but counselors of peace have joy. Clean on the first part. Deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil or plan evil. When you plan evil, you're looking for a chance to elevate yourself or harm others. Okay, and you devise that. You plan it. That's in from your heart. But what do counselors do of peace? They have joy. What's the contrast? Where's the joy? Where's it go to if they're counseling for peace with others? If they're not devising evil to inflict it on others? Are they not bringing joy to others? If you're counseling for peace and not evil things, not losing, not using lies.
I think it gives us joy in ourselves, Doug.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We were talking today in class what the Word of God can do and how it can change our lives and righteousness and knowing that we're right with God and having His Word can give us joy and peace. And so people who profess righteousness, who have this righteousness coming from their heart, they have this inner joy. They have this inner peace. No matter what else, you know, comes along, because we're all going to experience hard times in our lives. But people who have deceit, it means that they have evil in their heart, that they aspire to deceive, and it's ever turmoil. You know people like this. They're ever in turmoil. They're not happy people. It's always, what can I do? How can I be better than? How can I, you know, get even? Mm-hmm. All those kinds of things. They don't have joy in their life.
And what's the word counselor is the idea, does a counselor have the joy? The other people, they could go either way. See, I mean, a counselor is very promoting joy. Or does a counselor of peace have joy in his mind? He looks out and he says that his wise counsel has caused others to have contentment in their life. And even a step beyond contentment, joy. Joy in the way they're acting, what they've helped others to do for themselves. So joy is a good word, okay? And none of that promotes wrath, does it, if you have joy? All right? 21. No harm befalls the righteous, but the wicked are filled with trouble. Well, does harm come to the righteous? Sometimes, doesn't it? But the wicked are filled with trouble. So, just a general thing here that when you have righteous people, no real harm is going to come, or minimal trouble. But the wicked are filled with trouble. In other words, they just invite it. It's always coming to them. All right, one way or another.
So you don't think this is consequence of sin?
Oh, yeah. But the wicked are filled with trouble, sure. So the wicked lie. They deceive. Their life is all deceit and self. No harm befalls the righteous. I think that's just a general, nice statement about the idea of safety of being righteous. That there's security in that. All right? Some versions are dealing with minimal trouble or less harm, that kind of thing. I don't know about the word no. I think that's a general term there. Live good and you'll be generally live in safety. If you live wickedly, there'll be trouble. And it won't be a safe environment for you. Because you're just around different people. You're saying different things. You're promoting anger to people. Or you're causing wrath. You're doing all kinds of things like that. So I think that's the general idea. 22. Lying lips are an abomination of the Lord, but those who deal faithfully are His delight. Clean, isn't it? The Lord does loathe, disgust. He doesn't like liars. Those who deal faithfully with others are His delight. What is dealing faithfully with others?
Honest integrity.
That's right. That's right. And if you have honesty and integrity, the other person tends to trust you, don't they? Okay? So that's, God wants that. You're a blessed person if you don't have lying lips. 23. A prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaim folly. A prudent man, a cautious man, conceals knowledge. But the heart of fools proclaim folly. Fools from the innermost being, when you listen to them, like we talked a while ago, they're just saying things and just keep saying things that they shouldn't say when they should be silent. I think that's the idea of conceal. Not completely hide, but you know what's best to say and when to say it. It's out of your prudent speech. A prudent man conceals knowledge. The heart of the fools will hang folly. Any other thoughts on that? Let's see, 24:1. Let's see.
Do you think that might be gossip?
It could be.
Speech.
He just doesn't have knowledge. The fool is one that hates knowledge.
Yeah, if we're saying the knowledge there is something by someone else, the heart of a fool proclaims folly. Maybe. Certainly got an application on the first part, doesn't it? Okay? Yes. All right. A prudent man keeps his knowledge to himself, but it does not work for another's good. Why should you speak if it doesn't promote goodness and fairness? Why should you have something to say to somebody if you can't say nothing at all, say something good, okay? And I think that's good policy. Yes, sir. Okay. The hand of the diligent will rule, but the slack hand will be put to forced labor. The hand of the diligent is a person who is not lazy, is it? He'll rule. But the slack hand will be put to forced labor. The lazy one will be put to forced labor. Who's going to rule the one over who's in the forced labor? Who's going to rule over the one that is lazy? The one with a diligent hand, won't they? Okay? Who do you choose to, if you're in construction or business, who do you choose to lead the group or be in the group?
You don't want somebody lazy.
You don't want anybody lazy. All right? Yeah.
Said the hard worker.
You do, won't you? The one who's diligent. A diligent here is the idea of understands what's going on, experienced, trusted. Okay? I don't know if you corporal or the sergeant, whatever it is, when you choose those, you don't just pick the tallest, do you? Okay? So, certainly not the most handsome. Just kidding. So it's the idea, just a general rule, that those who work hard, well, there'll be a reward. But you better understand, you lazy person, that's who's going to be over you. That's who's going to lead you. Okay? And if you want to get out of that situation, don't be lazy anymore. Okay?
Maybe we should put this on the wall of the kids when they're going to school and everything, early on. You better work hard, or there's the shovel.
it's kind of like you heard a saying, readers are leaders, okay? Yeah. It's kind of like that, isn't it? It takes some diligence to sit down and read, doesn't it? Okay? And then to absorb it. So that's just a general rule, and it's good. 25. Anxiety in a man's heart weighs it down, but a good word makes it glad. Now, what are we talking? Two words we're talking about there. What is worry in a man's heart weighing down? What can you say to somebody to weigh their heart down?
Your job's in jeopardy.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's look at the second one. But a good word makes the heart glad. Somebody says something to you that cheers you up.
Negativity.
Is that encouraging? Does it encourage you? And the first part, worry in a man's heart weighs him down.
Negativity.
Yeah. Discouragement. Discouragement, encouragement.
This version says causes depression.
Okay.
When people get depressed over health issues and a lot of things. If somebody comes out by and gives you tells you that, they missed you at church because you're sick, maybe this or something, it makes you feel better.
Yes, it does. Encouraging, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay. You would say anxiety in a man or woman's heart weighs them down and discourages them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can dwell on something so long, it does weigh you down. But the contrast here is a good word makes it glad. So there's somebody on the outside saying something to you, isn't there? That's how I got the word, encourage and discourage. All right? And we all know that. That's a thing in business, isn't it? I can't give you a raise, but I can sure give you a pat on the back. All right?
Mm. Big whoopee. Take it to the bank, Doug.
Yeah. Like I said, big whoopee.
Of course, I always found, even if you gave them a pay increase, they were moaning and groaning a week later.
Yep. Right?
So why in the world I fight to give it to them? All right? But anyway, 26, the righteous is a guide to his neighbor, but the way of the wicked leads them, neighbor, astray. It's that you can help your neighbor, can't you? You have actions and words that you can influence others. And that's a good general statement. The righteous will guide the guide to his neighbor, but the way of the wicked leads them, the neighbors, astray. How's a wicked going to lead one astray, we've seen so far? What kind of example would they give to follow? If you can see that. One of deceit, wouldn't it? One of lies. One of dishonesty in scales and weighing things. One causing wrath. One turmoil. All these sort of things. So the way of the wicked can leave a neighbor astray. So we have responsibility to others, don't we? This is one of those other things. To others.
He speaks what is not true. He doesn't speak God's word. The fear, wisdom is, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge.
And so,
when he speaks, it's his own ideas, or it's worldly wisdom. It is not God's wisdom. That's how he's going to lead you astray.
Yes.
By what he thinks and by what he does.
That's
and
right.
It's not according to God's word.
That's right. And interesting here, the righteous is a guide to his neighbor. Righteous is a counselor to his neighbor. Yeah, you can guide him that way. But they use the word guide here. That may be the idea of actions, isn't it? Maybe the idea of words, too. Maybe include the word counselor. But in other words, everything we do has an influence on others. So be aware of that. 27, a lazy man does not roast his prey, but the precious possession of a man is diligence. Okay. A lazy man does not roast his prey.
Steals somebody else's.
Oh,
lets it lay there and rot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, roast is the word.
Catches roast, it and didn't do anything with it.
Right, roast presupposes somewhat that he's already caught it. But if he's lazy or doesn't follow through, complete the task, well, see, okay, that's a thought, Sally. Mm-hmm. The roast may do that. Now, and if you've ever cleaned fish or animals or whatever, there's a follow-through you have to do. Sometimes you've got to get with it before the spoilage or whatever you have to do. Now, but the precious possession of a man's diligence. Diligence is maybe in this case a time word, isn't it? Okay? Follow through with what you have started. If I've started a task, it's a precious possession of a man or woman to follow through, complete the task. Don't stop midway, let's say, before you finished. Okay? That's a point of character, isn't it? All right? If you said you're going to do something, complete it. All right? Or don't say it to start with.
Also, the hunt, being out in the woods, catching the prey, that's fun. We don't mind things that are fun or that are easy. And cleaning that fish, I've been there, done that, it's not fun, okay? And so that's so often what we do in life, whatever it is. As long as things are going good, we're okay. But let hard times come, let the things that aren't so fun come up, and we slack off. We're not diligent in those things. We're not to carry through like you're talking about, but just to have the character and to see it through.
In other words, there's in the length of a task from the beginning to the end, there's going to be spots in it that you like to do, but since you've committed to the task, you need to finish it out. That's really the point. You may love to fish and bring them in the boat, but you just don't want to cook them, clean them. All right? You need to finish the task. Okay? Matter of fact, I never worried about cleaning. I love cleaning them. But the cooking, you've just got to get out so much other stuff to cook them. Right. But anyway, but that's the right idea. Complete it to the end. 28. In the way of righteousness is life, and in its pathway there is no death. Nice general ending to this. The way of righteousness is what? We talk about life before him. Okay? When you're dealing with a life and a way of life that's good and honest and fair, generally you have health and security involved with it. You have peace of mind, contentment. But in its pathway, There is no death. That's continuation. What's the idea there? No death. That's another word for death, maybe. No separation. Maybe looking to eternity here. I'm not sure. Okay? And in this path where there is no death, if you're walking in that path of righteousness and life, maybe there is no death at the end. No separation from God. Just a thought, okay? Because death comes to all. I know it's a contrast with life and death there. Just a thought, okay? Reward, all that sort of thing. All right? So that's 12. Question 1. What two things are said about a wise son? 10:1 and 10:5.
Anyone? Makes a glad father. Makes his father proud, maybe.
Makes his father glad, okay? And 10:5. What does a wise son do? He's not lazy. Is the point.
He uses his time and opportunity and talents well.
Mm-hmm. He completes the task, let's say. Okay? He gathers in summer. 10:5. How will hatred and love react to the fruits of others? How does hatred react to the faults of others?
Stirs up strife.
Yeah, sure does, doesn't it? Okay? Sure does. Hatred stirs strife and wrath. What does love do?
Covers all sins.
What's that?
A multitude of sins.
Yeah, how does it do that? How do you cover trespasses and sins? How does love do that?
Forgives.
Forgives, doesn't it? Okay? It understands, it forgives. There's ample love, ample understanding to cover trespasses, to forgive them. Okay? Overcome them even. Okay? Love can overcome sins, can it? Okay? 3, a sluggard to them that send him is compared to what?
Vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes.
Okay? That's right. Okay? Man, if you pick someone to represent you, and they're sluggards, you better be ready for the irritation and the problem and the pain. 4, how does the Lord view a false balance and a just weight? False balance is an abomination in 11:1, and just balance is his delight. What are we talking about? H word.
Honesty.
Okay. Integrity. Okay. And even putting false balances when you're in business, in this idea, is lying, isn't it? Same idea.
I read books about the scale. They didn't care as much money like we did. They weighed things out, and everybody carried their own scales with them. That's what I understand.
Oh, really? Really?
They almost had to.
The trust.
You couldn't depend on a merchant you didn't know to weigh out the proper amount of something. And there's ways to,
handle scale.
To counter the weight that's supposed
right.
to be.
That's right. I've said it before, one set of weights for buying, one for selling.
That's right.
Right?
That's what
that
is.
Or, when they would give so much as a grain offering to the Lord and everything like that. They didn't need to cheat God, and in one, of the later prophets that talked about that they robbed God, because they gave him the blind stuff and they didn't bring everything that was necessary to offer and everything.
That's
so
right.
they were cheating in that way too.
Right.
See, and even in this point, here's a physical thing you do, and just business. It's just business. But it's an abomination to God, to the Lord. So you strong words there. Strong words, okay? To drive home the point that honesty, even in doing business and mundane things like this, it applies there. God's watching. God's there. All right? Full disclosure on a car if you sell it, right?
Carfax.
Well, that's only been a repair at a shop and there was a claim on it. But yeah, Carfax, they kind of deal with that issue. All right?
Yard sales. I mean,
sure.
More people lie at large yard sales.
How do they do that?
Huh? Yeah, it works.
Oh, it works. Oh, I see. Okay.
Just used it the other day.
If you get it home, bring it back. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
All right. I like the one where they say, oh, all my good stuff was sold real early, and you know you're one of the first ones there. They just sold it.
Let's stop. I think we're a minute or two after here. Mm-hmm. All right, I just saw that. So let's start at 5 next time, all right? And be reading ahead. Thank you very much. Very, very much. Thanks for